Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good morning. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Small Cap. He's a successful blackjack player who uses a somewhat unorthodox approach. Small Cap was on this show before. It was on June 24th, 2015. If you like what you hear today, you might want to listen to last year's show. On that show, we discussed why he played longer sessions than most pros do. He tips more than most pros do. Why he uses his real name when he's playing, and he's been very successful using this. He also has an interesting story about an embarrassing hotel room eviction. He's been playing blackjack seriously for 3.5 years. After some initial poor success, he became serious about his craft and is now successful. Small Cap, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having me again, guys. I appreciate it.
Okay, so it's been a year. Are you doing anything different today than you were doing a year ago?
Yeah, I put the brakes on it a little bit. I got kind of back in November, December, I kind of hit my first like serious burnout because I think we recorded the show in May and it taped in June, and basically that year I was on a plane every single week. I was doing a lot of international playing. In the last year, I went to Canada, Korea, Aruba, Panama, and just all over on top of playing in the States. And I made a ton of money last year. And then I had a lot of trouble finding new places that were taking my top bets because I was trying to bet like 2x2,000 everywhere, and it just wasn't happening. Not that it wasn't happening. The trips would just get frustrating. You'd go to a new place, you'd play for an hour and a half, and you get barred, and sometimes, you know, it would be international, too. So I just kind of took a break for a couple months, figured out what I wanted to do, and I'm back again playing. I just realized I don't need to make as much as I was doing that year, and I'm playing a little smaller now and enjoying it a lot more. So
now, I know one of the they opened that new Russia, that new casino in Vladivostok or in Siberia somewhere, and at one point I know you had said that you were thinking about going. Did you ever go there?
No, I really wanted to go. So there's a phone number. Like when they first put it up, you couldn't get to the website. You could just like Google the company that owned the casino. So I called, and the woman spoke like barely any English, and then I got a host's email. So I went back and forth, and what I could make out is I think they went up to 2,000, like, I don't know what the ruble's conversion was, but it was equivalent to 2,000 USD in the high limit, but I think it was CSM. That's what I got. And then you also, I think there was something weird with the visa that they might have, you might have needed, like, a visa, or they were doing, like, visa-free for a couple days. And then I think, I live by New York, so the flight would have been bad. I would have had to fly from JFK to Seoul, like sleep over in Seoul and then go to whatever, Gladys, however you say it. So no, I decided against it to go scout. It would have been a miserable trip. But if I found good information, I probably would have went.
Yeah, I mean, that's always kind of the dilemma, right? A trip like that, the expenses would be really high, and
exactly.
You could get there and there could be, as you say, it could be all CSMs or it could be a gold mine. You just don't know. It's a hard decision to make.
But in the last year, though, I did find a casino that, you know, they were looking for high-rolling players, and they were all CSM. So I researched, like, an independent host that was working with one of those casinos, and I just called them up. I was straight up with them. I said, hey, I'm an Advantage player. I don't know if you're willing to take me on, but I wanted to be upfront with you. Can you call this casino to see if I can give them $100,000 if they'll put in the shoe? And they actually did. And I was able to make like 3 or 4 trips and win like $100,000 from them. So it was an interesting strategy.
That sounds like a great strategy. So you had the host ask if they would accommodate you as a big player to deal you a shoe game instead of a CSM.
Yeah, and the rules were like Macau rules. They were stand 17, ES 10, no hole card, but original bet only and resplit aces. So I didn't really care what the penetration was. I just, you know, I'm assuming it was going to be like around 2 decks. But no, it originally started decent, and then it went to like 2.5 decks. But then I still played when they cut it bad. So they let me play on that for a while.
And how was the barring when that eventually came?
It was like the nicest thing in the world. They were really, really, really – it wasn't even a barring. They even said I couldn't play blackjack. They just said, look, you're really too good of a player. We're just going to have to put the CSM back. If you want to come back fully comp, you can play the CSM. So, like, the fallacy of that the barrings overseas are really nasty is not true. I had a real nasty barring in Washington. I had a real nasty barring in Las Vegas. And those are and Florida. And those were, like, my worst barrings all over.
The nicest ones in the country. You know, I have to say – My experience also is that barrings in foreign countries were much nicer than they were in the U.S. I never had any really nasty barrings in a foreign country. And it's funny because, you know, a lot of blackjack players, if you look at the sort of message boards, there are a lot of players who are afraid of the idea of playing overseas because they think such bad things are going to happen. But on the other hand, sometimes the games are so much better that even if they do end up stealing some of your money, you're still better off than you would have been playing a place like an Indian casino, right?
Well, yeah, look, like if I never went overseas, I probably would have made half. I made half what I've made in the United States and then half international. But when I came on the show last time, I was just getting ready for a trip in that one area where we played. It was international. It wasn't too far from the States. It got completely burned out. But, you know, I made $400,000 in 2-month-long trips there, and that would have never been – and those were from the same casinos, and that would have never been allowed in the United States, you know?
Right, right. Now, what about how do you deal with the issue of getting the money to these foreign countries? I mean, that means you have to be playing in your real name, right?
Yeah, international, I don't even question. I always play my real name. I've never really had a database issue. The one issue I had was being recognized. I played a Panama casino, and then this October, I went to the Hard Rock and the Punta Cana.
Punta Cana is Dominican Republic?
Yeah, the Dominican, and I just got unlucky that they were the casino owners happened to be friends with those casino owners, and they were at the casino at the same time I was there. Like just hanging in Dominican. So that was like the only time I was recognized like for being an advantage player. I don't really think the databases go that much further. I mean, Bahamas, they use them. Aruba uses them a little bit, I think. But other than that, you know, they haven't really been too much of a problem. So I just play my own name. It's a lot easier. It's a lot stress-free, you know?
So do you try to call and establish a line of credit ahead of time then?
No, because the funny thing that happened is if I apply for a line of credit, I kind of get like insta-backed off because of the problem is like the Showboat and what was it, the Taj and AC, I had lines of credit when I first started playing. And I just felt like that was the cool thing to do when I first started counting. And Then they knew I was an advantage player, so they put like some type of remarks on Credit Central. Not that I was an advantage player, but some like derogatory, like permanently closed, will not reopen. So every time I apply for credit now, they call around to the casinos like to inquire, like, hey, well, what's going on? Why are they permanently closed, not to reopen? And then they'll say, hey, don't deal to this guy. I got barred at a place. I guess I could say it now. I can't really play there anyway. At Sugar House in Philly. Where I got stuck like $100,000 there, and I was only bringing like $50,000-$60,000 a trip because it's not that far from my house. And I applied for credit, and then I got barred once I applied for credit, so I decided never to do that again.
Have you tried to see if you can have that removed?
You have to like go through a casino to do it, I believe. Like I don't think you can maybe I can call Credit Central myself. I haven't investigated. My thought process was you always have to call the casino, and you know, it's usually kind of a weird spot for me.
Sure.
But
yeah.
And also too, I've noticed like front money kind of scares casinos too. Like a lot of times, like I've deposited money, and like they look. Since I'm playing in my real name, I'm not really that hard to find. I always kind of like taking them by surprise. Because if I start off like losing huge, they usually like me, and if I start off winning huge, I'm usually going to get barred anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
So what you're saying is that you travel then with a large amount of cash.
Oh yeah, that's the thing that I guess made me freak out and take a couple months break. Not freak out, but just I had to. It's just scary, like, you know, it's not fun. Like when I went to Dominican, I brought I didn't know if they were going to let me play or not. My intention was to bet two hands 2,000. And I brought like 95 grand, and I get there, and I always declare the people at my airport where I normally leave, they know me, so like declaring leaving the United States isn't usually a problem for me at all. Even coming back home, as long as I'm going into that airport, you know, they really don't bother me because I've declared like over like 20, 30 times there, so they kind of know me. Going to the Dominican, I brought 95,000, and they really freaked out. Like they're like, "What is this?"
At the airport, you're talking about.
Yeah, and like I did my research, you're allowed to bring it, but I guess nobody does bring it. So like it was like it was kind of like weird. Then all of a sudden, nobody speaks English, so I'm like, "All right." But no, they let me through. But then I found out that they also have a rule that you can't bring out more than you bring in. So that's going to be a problem. So, like, I'm already here. I'm going to play. But I'm like, all right, if I lose, it's not going to be a problem. If I win, I'm going to have to figure out something. But then they said a casino can give you a certificate, like a winning certificate, to take it out. But I'm also going on the word of a customs agent, and the certificate's a piece of paper. So I'm not too sure that's, you know. So long story short, I wound up doing well. I did something for a friend down there, too, so I had to pay him his money. And so I made, like, 50 grand plus. I was bringing back, like, 90,000 in profit. So I had like 180 to bring to the Dominican airport, which was like probably the worst experience I ever had to deal with. So I take a cab back to the airport 2 days before because the casino barred me and they won't give me a certificate. So I'm kind of screwed. So I tell them what happened. And they basically said, "Oh no, you're going to be fine. You declared on the way in. We know you." I said, "Oh, okay. Can I get that in writing?" And they were like, "No." So I was leaving on a Friday. That was a Wednesday. So I went back to the hotel, hung out at the beach. Went back Friday. Went to their airport in Punta Cana. It's like arrival and departure. It's like two separate areas. So I go on the arrival to declare, and they tell me, "Oh no, you know, you don't need to declare here. You're fine. Just don't tell them you have it on you in arrival." I go, "What do you mean, don't tell them?" I go, "This is a lot of money. I'm not gonna like try to sneak this through, like, you know." And they're like, "No, you should be fine." I was like, "Okay." So I go through the arrival. Of course, they check my bag, and then when they open my bag, they see all the money. And then all the custom guys goes around. And I always have copies. They did give me a copy of something that I declared on the way in, so that kind of calmed them down a little bit. But they called over the arrival section. The supervisor came over, and, you know, he verified that I did try to declare it, but, you know, they're speaking a different language. They were looking weird. And they put me in a room with like seven of these guys with 180 grand, and they counted it all. And it was real, like the room looked like terrible. It was just like a little dirty, dusty room, and I was very scared. And that was it. I almost missed my flight, but still, that was like a real nerve-wracking experience for me.
Wow, I'll bet. But they just let it pass.
Yeah, because I mean, I had them call the casino. I had like copies of wagers that we did. I had like all documented proof. And I actually said, if they're going to bring me another room, I'd like an attorney. I mean, I was pretty calm about it. And I think going on Wednesday, because the guy that came was the supervisor that I asked to speak to on Wednesday. Cause like I made the effort to go back to the airport ahead of my flight just to say, "Hey, what do I have to do? Do I have to try to open a bank account? You know, this is what happened, you know. I played. I'm not allowed to play. They won't give me a certificate because they don't like me. And I legitimately won this money. How do I get it off the island?"
Huh.
You know?
And now, they have the same rules in Korea, right, where you have to declare to get it in? And
yes, but Korea is different because Korea, they let you wire, any foreigner with a passport can wire out to $50,000.
So oh, that's new. Like, that's yeah. better than it used to be.
Yeah, that kind of helped. So like when I went there, I got a stamp on my passport. But I had a similar problem in Korea. Walker Hill was all like CSM, and they're real sweaty now, so I don't even – it's probably fine to talk about it. Like, I got to play like an hour on this game, and this is just the reason why like I flew out to Korea. They put in like a six-deck game. It was 300 to 5,000, and it was decent pen. So I went there, and I bought like 100 grand, and they were willing to convert my money. But they charged like 4%, so it was like a $4,000 fee. But they were going to give you all these like comps too. So I figured, you know what? I'm just going to convert it here. It's easier. And if they let me grind out like a day or two on it, it'll be fine.
They convert back that same amount at the same rate?
No, the Paradise casinos won't. The Seven Luck casinos will. That's what I found out with. And so I got like kind of screwed because I got all my Korean won. I think I lost like $30,000 on that game. And then I was eating like at that noodle shop or one of the restaurants, and the host came in and barred me. They always have the host bar you out there. I don't know why. I guess because it's the only one that speaks English. So then I went to 7-Luck and found out that they'll exchange the same rate the same day. So you have to like keep doing it, but that's how you get the certificate. And so like the exchange rate, when you exchange, you get like a certificate, and then they say how much you won or lost on it. Since I didn't do that and got barred from Walker Hill, I didn't have a certificate, but since I was able to wire out the 50 grand and I only won like 40 profit for the trip, I was fine, but it would have been a similar situation. But they just seemed like way more laid back and relaxed in Korea. Like, it seemed like they didn't really care about cash in Asia that much. Like, you would walk into a bank and like everybody would just be throwing cash around. It seems like our culture is a little more restrictive on cash than it is in Asia. At least that's the feel I got.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. So let's say...
Yeah, that's what I've been up to. It's been a lot, but, you know, it's been relatively stressful. But then also, too, going back to, like, trying to, like, so when I was, like, wanting to take a break, I'm like, all right, so what do I do next? Do I go back to working? And I don't know. I think it's, like, pretty hard to go back to working when you haven't had to work for a while. Not that this does not work, but, you know.
Well, and you make less money, right?
You make less money, and I like to play blackjack. I'm pretty good at it. I enjoy it. It just gets stressful times, but...
Yeah. So let's say that there were a brand new casino. Let's say you found out they've opened a casino in Japan.
Sure.
How would you approach, you know, making a trip there or deciding whether you were going to make the trip there? What's the process you would go through?
Well, I would try to call. I'd first try to call up on the phone and see if anybody speaks English, and just tell them, you know, I'm a business guy from New York, and you know, I love to play blackjack when I'm on my travels, and I would just see what kind of games they have, try to ask for the rules, see if there's any comp programs. I would start talking about baccarat first, and then I'd move it over into blackjack. And if I couldn't get any, a lot of times they don't speak, even though they say they speak English, they don't speak well enough where you can understand it. So then I'll ask for their email address, and then we could translate through emails. And then I would try to – I usually can get the information, though. And a lot of these places almost are all CSMs for me, so it's not worth it for me to go out here there because I'm a counter. But yeah, I can pretty much get the info pretty easily. I've been pretty successful with doing that.
Huh.
So when you were on the show a year ago, you did hold down a semi-full-time job in addition to – being a blackjack player. Did you just say that you no longer have a job and you're basically...
Yeah, I gave that up. I gave that up pretty much, I think, the month after the show because I wanted to go scout all these international places, and it's just not really fair, and it wasn't fair to the clients either because, like, they're supposed to get quarterly performance reviews, and for the last, like, 6 months they were just because I was always away. So there was money that was being paid to me. So I just told my family that they can keep it themselves and do the work, or they can hire somebody else. And I always have the option of going back to it, but I kind of like doing my own thing. It's kind of hard working for your family as well.
It's kind of hard working for anybody.
Yeah, pretty much. And now it's just like, now I've been so I started playing again in February. So from like November to February, I just took a break, kind of figured out what I wanted to do. Oh, I forgot to say the reason why I kind of went to the break on top of the Dominican trip is they shut down all my bank accounts. So, like, I couldn't I couldn't do banking anymore because all the money I won was cash. So I kept depositing cash, and then they shut all my accounts down. I was paying like a huge chunk in taxes, so I was just under like a lot of stress. I got that all sorted out. I paid my taxes. I got new bank accounts open.
Can you tell us which banks should close your accounts on you?
Yeah,
I know,
sure.
Chase seems to be one of the worst.
What bank did you say, Rich?
Chase seems to be one of the worst.
You know, this was TD Bank. I had this account. They're big on the East Coast, I think, in Florida. I had this bank account since I was like 17, and I was 30 when they closed, and I'm 31 now. So,
they tell you it was just because you were making too many cash transactions?
Well, it was a couple things. The bank manager I was cool with left. He knew my deal. My account got red flagged from Canada. When I won money, there was a there's TD Canada Trust up there. So TD Canada Trust and TD Bank NA, which is the U.S. branch, will do borderless banking. So they'll wire 100,000 per day over the phone. So when you're playing in Canada, they'll also convert your money at like almost, not almost nothing, but maybe like 1%, which is, you know, which is fine. So I would play Canada, deposit winnings into the Canadian account, and then when I get to the States, just call over the phone and transfer them back into my bank account. So since they can't, so I think like in all of Canada, I made something, and I did multiple transactions to clear out the account. So since like it came like 3 days in a row, my account got flagged, and then the branch manager called me in and asked me what it was about. And then I showed him my gambling log for taxes. In Canada, in one province, if you on the cash out, if you request your CTRs, they'll give you a copy of your CTR, your Canadian CTR. So that was like good proof for him. So I showed him all that, and he seemed cool with it. He left, and then I started playing Panama, and I did wires down there one time, and then I kept depositing cash. And I think it was all the international wires that really, really flagged it for me.
Especially Panama is probably not a good place to be wiring money.
All I know is I started playing Panama, and then I got a letter, and I got a letter. But also, Panama's not a great place to carry six figures either. It's just
right.
A stupid situation.
Right.
So, they shut me down, but I went to a new bank, told them what was up, and everything seems to be good now. And, you know, you learn what to do. I'll probably never do international wires. I'll probably just lug cash if I go.
Huh. And do you have trouble now depositing large amounts in your bank accounts?
No, because when the bank backed me off, I just shit slammed them with as much as I could. So I figured they were going to back me off. I paid taxes on it, so I deposited like another $300,000 in cash. Got my cash down to like nothing. Not nothing, but just enough to play. You know.
Yeah.
Because they give you a month to They can't close it right away. They have to give you 30 days, so I just deposited a lot. 30 days.
Huh.
Probably not the smartest thing to do, but I didn't care if I got audited. I paid all my taxes. So.
Right.
I just didn't want to lose the bank.
Now, what are your feelings about the women of these different countries you've been...
Oh, man, I guess I'll go there. All right, Bob, I got a story for you, all right? all right, so I played Aruba after when we were I played Aruba in July, and there is this really, really cute girl in the casino. She's from Venezuela, and I played this casino 2 years in a row because I go there for vacation, and the pit boss introduced me to her, and she was like really, really attractive, and I told her I'd meet her the next night. And then, the next night I meet up with her, and we go up to, like, the room immediately. And then she starts asking me for money, and I'm like, oh. I'm like, all right, whatever. She's really, really too hot to say no. So I start giving her money. And then, I didn't know where else was at, but I'm not going to lie. I really don't care. I don't have that much shame. So then I meet up with her in the room, and, like, it's been, like, 7 hours, and I'm like, hey, you realize I'm not paying, like, on a per-hour basis, right? I mean, like, I have to call this off at some point. And she's like, no, can I just stay? So I'm like, yeah, you can stay. And then she goes in her purse and hands you back the money. So I'm like, oh, wow, she's pretty cool. So then, like,
wow,
then,
what
like,
a move that was.
Oh, it's like, a, yeah, honestly, I was thinking about teaching this girl to play blackjack. If she wasn't a con artist, she'd be really good. So
if she would do that, that must mean you're qualified to be on the Republican ballot for president.
Yeah, maybe I'm not that smart, man. Anyway, so I wake up the next morning, and she, I'm like, are you going to, like, leave? What's your deal? And she was just like, no, can I stay? I'm like, yeah, I don't care. I'm here for another week. So then she stayed with me the whole week, and then I started to like her. You know, and then, like, she would, like, say, hey, well, if I'm going to stay, I don't have any clothes. So, you know, I'd take her shopping and all stupid shit like that. But long story short, like, the last night we were there, she started, like, crying. And I was like, what's the matter? And she was like, oh, my baby needs surgery or some bullshit. And I was all, like, into her, and I made, like, 50 grand that trip. So I was like, how much do you need? And I just gave her the money. And then, like, I went to go play after that, and they're like, you know you got scammed, right? I'm like, yeah, pretty much, but whatever. I had a good time for it. And, I mean, I have a lot more stories like that. I just obviously don't like to talk about them on the radio too much, but that was probably the funniest one. But I actually, now that I'm not 100% sure it was a scam, I've actually stayed in touch with her. She's a pretty, she was a pretty cool girl. I saw her down in Hard Rock too, in the Dominican, because I guess they work all like the resort casinos. So I stay in touch with her. I'm friends with her now. But yeah, I mean, it's really rough down in Venezuela.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So and then there's a lot more. I have a ton of other stories, but that was the worst one. That was equivalent to the Borgata one with Bilda. So I had to give one story per episode, you know?
That's right. We were going to call you Bilbo for this show after this story for the last one. So those listeners who don't know what we're talking about probably ought to check out the June 24th, the last year show. It was a good one. So next time we have to call you Scammed. What do we call you next time?
Venezuela? I don't know. Maybe I'll give you another one before the end. I don't know what time it is.
Yeah.
I still have time.
I'm always interested in Korean stories, so.
Oh, okay. Well, no, I have a good Korean one, but it's not as good as that. So, like, in Korea, I live in North Jersey, and they're king of, like, they have, like, a million different rub-and-tug massage parlors out here, right? And they're all Korean women. So I would think, like, you know, you go to Korea, and it's going to be tons of them. So I walked around. So the host in Korea was like, what are you doing? This was at the 7-Luck place, not the Walker Hill. The 7-Luck place let me play for a couple of days, but their game is disgusting. They cut they don't have any more 6-deck, and they cut 3 out of 8 decks, but the rules are good and the comps are good. So I played it when I was out there. Anyway, I played it, and the host asked me if I wanted to go see any girls. And I was like, no, I don't really, you know, I'm good. And this was at the time, like, MERS was being scared. So I was like, no, I don't want to meet any woman out there. But long story short, I was just walking around, and every time you walk around Korea, if there's, like, 2 barber poles, it's, like, a rub-and-tug massage place. That's what the host told me. So, like, I'm starting to walk around.
But it's also a barber shop, right? I mean, or at least it
used to be. No, this was, like, it's just, like, a brothel, kind of. I don't know. Like, it was weird, and I didn't know that, so the host told me that. So I'm walking around, and now I'm, like, seeing it everywhere. So, of course, I, like, walk into one, and they're like, no white guys. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I walked into another one, and they're like, no white guys. I don't even know if I was going to do anything. I just wanted to check it out. And I just thought that was, like, real, real interesting. And then I went back and asked the host, like, hey, why won't they take foreigners? And they're like, well, sometimes in our culture, you know, they think – if the Korean woman's with a white guy, they're like tainted or something. So yeah, it was like shocking. Like, I didn't really believe that when I went out there, but.
Huh.
Yeah.
When I was there, which was a lot longer ago, basically every barbershop, you know, had women that would, you know, do your nails and shave you and, you know, massage your feet and give you a happy ending after the barber had, you know, cut your hair. So
I could have used the haircut out there.
So yeah, that was just sort of standard. Also, they had massages in the hotels themselves. So, but you know, things have changed a lot since I was in Korea. So.
Yeah, I wish they were as good. I was kind of really bummed out about it. Trip, but you know, it was an experience. I kind of, you know, that's the cool thing about Black Tech too. Like, I would have never been able to go to Korea. I would have never gone to all these other places. So, you know, I kind of made the decision being young. I still want to go travel, see some places, and you know, just got the casinos when I'm there.
Yeah. So now you've started taking kind of a new approach and decided to bet less, right?
I ran some sims, right? So, like, I think, yeah, I think, like, there's no difference between, like, 2x1,000 and 2x2,000. Because when you hit a good shoe, it's going to be over the casino's chokehold anyway. So if you're going to play over their chokehold, you might as well bet your bankroll or, like, bet, like, what you're comfortable with. But I noticed if you want to stay under, like, if you want to, like, stay under the radar, stay under the 10,000 thing, like 2x500 or even like 2x600, it's probably like the sweet spot, and you could still probably make like 200-300 grand a year if you grind out some hours. And I've done way less trips, but I almost gotten the same amount of hours this year. I've only made 2 trips this year, and I'm at like 190 hours so far. But like when I'm on a trip, I'll play like a maniac, though. Like I'll play 10, 12 hours a day. As much as I can, just because it's all I found out it's really even not about the limit, it's about if they'll let you play a long time per day.
Right. So you don't care about the
counting that. Like, I'm sorry. What were you saying, Rich?
You don't really care about the rules, right? It's about how many hours they'll let you play.
No. For example, like I just played a 300 max place, and I would have never like last year. I would have never considered playing a 300 max place, but you know. Every other place barred me, and this place had like a real shitty game. They were, it was hit 17, resplit aces, and I mean, I was getting cuts like 1.5 to 2 decks, but still called the medium like 1.75. But they let me spread like 5 to 10 to 7 times 300, and they let me play 13 hours a day. So, you know, I just sat and played it, and I guess
so. That's a polite spread, $10 to 7 hands of 300.
Well, yeah, but I don't. It's the only way you can get like a score of 30 on the game. So I mean, it's still a crappy game. But it's not that crappy if they let you play. If they give you like a reserve game and let you spread like that, you know.
Right. Right.
So yeah. Like, yeah, and if I look at my spreadsheet of where my winnings came from, they all came from, like, bad penetration games. I don't think I've made that much money from good pen places just because they haven't let me play that much. It just seems like the casinos will either offer, like, a really tough game to beat, and they'll gamble with you and be like, okay, let's see if you're a skill counter, and okay, you beat us, take the money you won. Or, like, the game's really good to begin with, and then they let you play, like, 2 hours to evaluate you, or they back you off. So I kind of like places that'll let me play. If I can find a place with great pen that'll let me play 10 hours a day, obviously I'll play it. It's just usually not the case.
Sure. Yeah.
You know.
What international places are on your bucket list to hit in the next year or two?
I'd like to go to London, Australia, Monte Carlo. I don't know if any of them are good. And just when I'm in Europe, I'll probably just go all over in Europe and see what's up. But I kind of want to play the States, because now that like I'm willing to bet smaller, it's kind of like in the States I burned myself out of all like the known big places to play at. So I still have tons of places to play in the United States. They're just all smaller places. So you know, I'd like to try that. And I'm not like in any rush to make money now. My main goal was to make the money and to get it into an investment account, because I knew if I had the right asset allocation by the time I was retired, if I got like $1 million into into like some stock account, it'll be worth a lot by the time I'm ready to retire. So that was like my main goal. Now I'm just trying to make enough where I could save a little bit and spend money. So I'm a lot more relaxed, but I needed a couple months to figure all that out. That's basically what I've been up to.
Have you had any problems with the Indian casinos in the U.S.?
Just Hard Rock in Tampa. They were the worst. I was playing under an alias, and it was in the beginning though. Like it was, I think it was way before I came on the show. Maybe like my second year. But the manager came and like I ran. I don't know why I ran. Not run. I just like started sprinting, like just to leave. Normally, like that was the worst thing I could do. But I did that. And security surrounded me, and basically they wouldn't let me leave. And they're like, hey, we know you're not this guy. Who are you? Identify yourself. I'm like, I'm not. He'd be like, hey, I want to leave. They wouldn't let me leave. They're like, we're going to call the police. I'm like, all right, call the police, but make sure you don't call the tribal police. Call the state police. And they're like, no, we're going to call the tribal police. And
yeah, like they're going to listen to you, right?
Yeah. Well, I figured I'd try. Why not?
Yeah.
And I was about to leave, and they wouldn't let me leave. They just kept me there for 45 minutes, and they were like, look, we know you're not this guy. We're going to search you if you don't give us your real ID. So basically once they said that, I was like, all right, I'm just going to hand up my real ID. I don't really care. Obviously, I made enough exposure where I'm not going to be able to play here, and this place isn't that good anyway. So I gave them my real ID. They trespassed me and let me go because I did have something I didn't want to get found with another identification. So.
I assume you learned your lesson in that regard after that incident.
Yeah, I don't play. I just was playing smaller too at that point. There's a certain chain I'll use different names with, just because I'm so comfortable with it and I know how to. I'm comfortable with it. But for the most part, I just play my real name, and if they bar me, they bar me. Like now that I'm playing smaller too, like I'll play unrated.
How is that going?
It sucks, but like, it doesn't suck. It's just like it's my only option. It's definitely because like now, like so on the East Coast, like I can't really. I'll like try to sneak in and play unrated sometimes. And I recently won like I had like 2 weekend trips playing unrated at like 2x600, and I was able to win like $30,000. And it was kind of nice to be able to get heat and like leave, you know, and like not have to get backed off. Because when you're playing with the card, right, you might as well just. I don't know if you might as well get backed off, but. They're definitely going to note the card when you come back. But when you're unrated, there's nothing to note. So it's a nice change. But it's still – I still think there's more EV to play rated if you're not known. But I still think my strategy wasn't that bad. You know, just try to make as much money as you can and then take a couple months off, and you could always go back to playing smaller.
Yeah.
You know, but look, if there's new casinos that open or something else, I'll try to go back playing bigger. It's just it's just like if one casino lets you play at 2x2,000, everywhere else lets you play at 2x500, it's kind of too much of a gamble, you know? Because, like, you have to run good at that casino or you're not going to make any money for the year.
Yeah. And how do you feel about Vegas as a place for counting cards?
I haven't been there since the show. I mean, I think, like, if you're going to play, like, 2x300, it's great. I'm assuming it's great. Like, they can't really sweat it that bad. But I haven't been back there since they fill all 6-5 in, so I don't even know what the floors look like now. I'm assuming they're still playable games. They just I know when I was playing Vegas, I wouldn't play any of even the Stan 17 shoe games. The Hit 17 shoe games were a lot less heat. So, like, the MGM properties that had the Stan 17 resplit ace, the Surrender shoe games, like the Bellagio, for example, those two tables that they had by those double decks, like, I would never play those. I'd play the Pit Across that had the Hit 17 shoes. And they were okay. Like, Caesar's Palace had the Hit 17 games outside of the High Limit. The High Limit room was, like, kind of a trap. And I think if you just played the worst game, not the worst games, but, like, the games the casinos aren't looking at in Vegas, it's probably still a decent approach if you want to go in. That's probably what I would try to do now. I don't know if it would work, but that would be my default plan if I were to go back. And I probably will go back at some point. I'm just not in a rush.
Yeah, when I first started playing, you know, there was still plenty of single deck in Vegas at that time. But, you know, there was a lot of heat on it, and if you went and played the shoes, you could just get a lot more EV in than if you ever tried to play the single deck games. Just, you know.
Yeah, I still think that works. And then the problem with the High Limit in Vegas is, like, they watch every hand. But those pit bosses just literally, like, stand next to the table and watch the action. But, like, a lot of places in the country aren't like that at all.
Yeah.
No, but it's Vegas. I guess everyone goes there to try to play.
Most blackjack players also play other table games. Because while they're in the casino, they just might see a Mississippi stud game with that's highly beatable. Do you extend that way, or do you limit yourself mainly to blackjack?
I basically play mostly blackjack. I mean, I've done hole carding. I've made decent money with it. It's just a lot of the games have tightened up like crazy. And then I used to scout for some like blackjack hole card stuff, but a lot of the times it's hard to do solo, and I'm not a big fan of playing with people. It's just, I don't know, maybe it's my personality or whatever, but I just really enjoy to play solo.
So sure, if I, it's not like if I see something, I'm going to play it. But also, too, I, you have to look at, like, your image. If I'm going to be blasting this casino pretty large, is it going to look weird to, like, bet red at a carnival game to see if the dealer is good? You know, like, if it's going to look weird, I won't do it. But if I'm new or nobody's known, sure, like, I'll try to, I'll try to check it out. But it's not like I wouldn't play it. It just depends on what my image is at the place, if that makes any sense. Like, if it fits, you know?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, sure.
Like, if I was going to Atlantic City now, knowing that, like, I can't bet huge, and I see something, sure, like, I might look for that first before I try to sneak in and play blackjack, because I know I could bet a lot smaller and stand at the radar. But if I'm playing at a place I've already logged, like, 150 hours in, I'm probably not even scouting the pit, the carnival pit, if that makes any sense.
It makes sense to me, and I'm sure it makes a lot of sense to Richard.
Yeah.
Because, like, the hour, all right, so, like, the limits, and also, too, like, a lot of times the limits are real small, like, they're either 100, 200, and when I was playing blackjack, my EV per hour is, like, 500, 600, so even though the variance is insane, I'm used to it, I like it, and, you know, I just, if they let me play 10 hours a day, there's no point to look for anything else. I'm just going to grind it.
Yeah, if you can get your counting EV up that high, then, yeah, you're better off than you would be on the carnival games, because a lot of times, I mean, sometimes carnival games can be, you know, higher
really,
than that,
yeah.
But there's also a lot of carnival games that people are out grinding that, you know, have EVs lower than that.
Yeah, but the carnival games are great for people with, like, a bankroll of less than, like, 50 or 100,000, because you're going to get the same EV that you would need to count on a $500,000 bankroll.
Yeah.
So, like, it makes sense, but you're not going to, there's no way that dealer's going to be on 10 hours a day every day, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of my thought process. But, no, I'm pretty excited to start playing again and, just taking, like, a little different approach. And, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, you mentioned that you wanted to go to London. I've now heard of two different people that have had money stolen by casinos in London, basically for counting cards, where the casino said, you know, we're a private club, counting cards is against our rules, we're keeping your money.
Have were they barred from, was it LCI? Well, I guess you can't say it, but I've heard, like, LCI is pretty bad with that.
The Ritz was one of them, which is owned by CET.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Huh. Okay.
And in that particular case, I believe they're fighting it. Well, they fought it to start with and lost, and now I guess they're going to appeal it.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
no, it's good. That's good to know. I was on the info I had about that is also too. Like I'm kind of I don't know. I have a bad habit of not believing. I'm not saying I don't believe you at all. I do believe you're rich, but like I just always I don't know. Like, when you look at PGA 21, the things people have said the worst about are the places I've done really well at. So, like, I always just want to go see something for my own eyes, and if it's too much of a risk, I won't do it.
Yeah.
But with this, no, I've talked to a couple players, and I've talked to one player that got, like, it was a small amount. It was, like, $2,000, but still, you know, he got stolen. And his deal was he got barred at one of the chains and went in another chain with a different identification. So So I thought, even though they shouldn't take your money, I thought that was possibly some of the reasons. But, I probably just play – I talked to a couple hosts out there, so I'm probably going to take that approach. I don't know. I'm not, like, in a rush to get out there either. I'll probably put that off. But I want to go see London. Like, I've never been there. I would like to see what it looks like. And if they have blackjack, I'm obviously going to play, you know?
Sure. Yeah, no, I love London, and I've been saying for 35 years that London is a gold mine that nobody's figured out how to take the gold out of the mine yet.
Somebody told me it's really rich over there, but there's no action casino. I don't know. Or on blackjack, you know, it's still on roulette.
That's true, but it's also cyclical. You know what I mean? It depends. I mean, they get a lot of Middle Eastern action, and so it depends on who's pumped up, you know, how the economies are doing and who has money. And
that makes sense. I don't think the UK, it's more of like, I won't go anywhere where there should be a problem with cash, you know? And a lot of the countries, like, it's just too scary. Like, I'd love to go play all South America and just go scout it, but, like, you know,
it's going to be too much of a problem. I'm probably going to miss a lot of good games down there, but I got kind of scared. And, you know, all it takes is one mistake, and then you're not here anymore. So I just kind of got to be careful where I go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
But your goal was to make $1 million and then retire. You must be very close to, or even over that goal.
Yeah, no, I'm over.
Nobody
it,
ever retires.
But you like to play blackjack. I mean, this is the problem. Okay, you hit your goal. You think you're going to be magically happy, and you're not. It's just money. It's just a piece of paper. And are you a little comfortable? Yeah, but, like, you know, $1 million isn't enough to retire. So if you're, like, an AP and that's, like, your full-time gig, you have to literally make enough to retire. And then if you hit that magic number, your goalpost is going to keep putting back because there's always something else you want. And at the end of the day, is you like to play and you like to gamble with an egg. So, like, you're always going to want to play, I think.
You know, when I first moved to Las Vegas, there was a legendary blackjack player named John Kretz. And this guy had won over $1 million playing blackjack and had gone out and had plastic surgery to change his face so that he could continue playing. And this is in the 70s, when $1 million in the 70s was a lot more than it is today. And when I met him, I said, you know, if you made $1 million, why would you go have surgery to change your face? You know, you could retire. And he said, you know, and what am I going to do? Sit at home and watch TV? Playing blackjack is what I do. I want to keep doing it. And, you know,
yeah,
that made sense to me, you know.
Because you get to a level like where, like, you know, it's just the whole thing is decently, you know, I was at the point where it wasn't fun, but then I realized I did always enjoy it, and you could always make it fun again. You just have to figure that out. When it stops being fun and just a grind, it's just like any other job, and most people got into this to do something they enjoy and to have the freedom, you know? So
right.
I just wanted to kind of go back to that, those roots.
But now you say that you're still playing, like, when you go play, that you're still playing 11 hours a day. I mean, doesn't that lead you to burnout?
It's because, I don't know, I don't have, like, the compelling need to, all right, so, like, what I used to do is, I just got back from a 10-day trip. I literally got back on Monday, and I didn't play every day because I was driving like crazy, but I played most days, and I got like 90 hours in. I got barred all over. It was my second trip to the area, but like now I would have came back, slept for like a day, did my laundry, got my clothes, and I would have been right back out on Friday because like I wanted to hit the goal, and that's all that mattered to me. Now like I'm just doing different things. I called some of my friends back home. I got plans for the weekend. I have plans tonight, and I'm just kind of relaxing and enjoying, and if I could play – It to me, like, it's so much, now that, like, I have the skills to get in the hours at high stakes, to play smaller just seems like it's just a lot easier, you know? Like,
So when you're taking your time off and enjoying things, it's in between trips as opposed to playing less hours per day and maybe spending time enjoying the place that you went to travel to.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, when I'm on the road, I'm always going to grind. Like, I'm always going to work as hard as I possibly can. I don't think I can shut that off. Like, I would love to try, but... You know, like, this one trip, I hit probably one of the worst runs I've been on in a while. But, you know, by the end of the trip, I grinded out just because, like, I got heads up for not 90 hours, you know?
Right,
so
right.
And I've been on worse runs than that, too. But, you know, I think I'm just going to continue to work real hard and go on places maybe I could play, like, 7 to 10 days straight. And, you know, and I am looking into other AP avenues, too. So, like, I'm constantly, like, reading different things on planes and just looking, you know, looking for different things.
Sure.
That I can do. Because I don't think I'm going to be able to be a blackjack card counter for the rest of my life. I'll always try to play blackjack, but eventually, you know, it's just not going to make sense at one point, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm always going to want to play, you know? I tried to learn poker, too, and poker's just a real bad game for me. I really don't have that much patience.
Too much waiting around for the other guys.
Well, I mean, I could do it too, but it's just like for like you have to be like super, super, super good to grind out a profit at 5-10, and they're making like 70, 80 bucks an hour. I'm like, I can probably sneak into every casino I've been 86 at and make $70 an hour and play all day.
Hey, you know, in my book, you know, my interview with Tommy Hylands, and that was, you know, I don't know, 17 years ago or whatever, but yeah. He said exactly the same thing. To make $50 an hour playing poker, you have to be really, really good, and to make that playing blackjack is nothing.
Well, it's literally, you could probably play the station double deck game, like, what, $10 to, like, $120. I don't know, just like some game where, I don't know, they probably sweat it out, but I don't know, anything. Like,
I don't know. Yeah, it seems to me like in Vegas you could make $50 an hour and rarely get barred.
You could probably just gamble straight up and cash the free play and be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know. But it comes down to it, I don't think I enjoy poker. You know, it's just not a game for my personality. But I still try once in a while. But, you know, I'm just like reading instead of playing like 1-2. It's just boring driving like 80 miles to go play like 1-2. I don't know.
Yeah.
And if I play anything higher, I don't have a shot, so. But, yeah, no, everything's been good so far. I'm probably gonna do more international trips, I would say. Probably in like the fall. I'm going to enjoy the summer around here. I haven't been home. You know, I bought this condo like 3 years ago, and I've never even been in the pool. So I'm going to kind of just enjoy and relax. They have, like,
In places like Korea, do you do any sightseeing at all? To try to do anything to see the country?
It's embarrassing, but no, I did nothing. I stay at really nice hotels. Like, my deal is if I'm going to travel and fly first class and let's stay at like a nice hotel. So if I'm like really tired, I'll just go get like a nice meal and I'll just relax. But Korea, when I was in Korea, I got barred from Seoul. Then I took they have a KTX train down there, which is like the speed train. So that was pretty cool. And I took it to Busan and then played the casinos in Busan, got barred. And then I was going to take a plane to Jeju, but I was, like, really tired by then. And then I was worried about the currency thing. You know what? I'm just going to get the hell out of here. I probably should have scouted it because I was already there. But I just didn't want another problem, so I just came home. But, no, yeah, I've been all over. I haven't really seen any really tourist places anywhere. I usually just play and come home.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I might change that up a little bit, too, though. I don't know, I just kind of like being home. Like, when I'm done, I want to just be home, be in the house, and relax. I kind of like New Jersey.
My very first foreign trip was, I think I got spoiled because we flew into Frankfurt and rented a car, and in Germany, the casinos are spread all over the place. So we kind of had to see some of the countryside because we were driving from place to place. You know, and we drove through Germany, Netherlands, Belgium, and then took the ferry over to England. So, you know, it was kind of a nice way to see a lot of places, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. Like, see, with me, I'm always just flying into an area and then just flying out real quick. And I'm always by myself. Like, if I was with somebody, it's just... You know,
that's
like kinda,
yeah.
If you play by yourself, it's like, all right, this is cool. And then you just want to go back to making money. But I don't know. It's definitely interesting. Oh, speaking of your German story, you reminded me of something. There's this one rent-a-car company I've been using a lot that I like. They're from Germany, Six Rent-a-Car. I've been using them like crazy, and I've been getting like a Mercedes or a BMW for like $28 a day, wherever they're located. So if anybody wants like a nice car for the same price as a regular car, I've been using them a good deal.
And that's in the United States?
Yeah, they started in Germany and they're in the United States. It's growing like crazy now. They just put one into LA Airport, Seattle, Detroit, Florida. They'll probably be all over real soon.
And what's the name of it?
Sixt, S-I-X. I think it's S-I-X-T.
Huh.
Yeah, the only negative thing is, and the reason why I still use Avis sometimes, say you're on a trip for 7 days and you have a good place that's taking or you want to stay, you can only extend for 3 days with Six and you have to go back to the location and do a new contract. The other companies you can just call on the phone to extend. So that's the only negative thing about them. But other than that, the price is great. They're in Vegas too, actually.
I just Googled it. Yeah, they're on Warm Springs Road. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I like them a lot. And the only other negative, since they're cheap, they're usually the line at the counter is pretty bad when you first get there. And there's like one employee. But other than that, the cars are like, I've never had a car with over 10,000 miles ever for anything from them. Maybe it's because they're so new, but it's been a good experience.
I'm just looking here in Vegas. You can rent a Mercedes for $545 a month.
Yeah, that's not bad, right?
Right, yeah. That's probably what a lease is. Of course, that probably doesn't include taxes. So.
Yeah, no, but pretty much. But, like, if you're driving around, it's nice to be comfortable. That's, like, kind of one thing I decided. If I'm going to travel as much, especially last year, I'm definitely going to do it where I'm comfortable, where it's not going to be, like, a burden to be on the road. I don't know how some guys, like, when I watch, and I'm not making fun of the church team or anything. I think they did a great job. But, like, I would watch the, I'd watch the videos, and they'd be staying in, like, you know, like budget hotels, and I can never do that. I don't know. But maybe I wasn't on a team and it was my own money, you know? But it's just, I need to be comfortable, you know?
Right, right.
But,
yeah. All right. Bob, do you want to do some commercials?
I do. We're taping this in advance, and it's going to air sometime in the indefinite future. So we can't talk about exact promotions that are going on when it airs because we don't know when it's going to air. But we have three sponsors. South Point has more than 10,000 games, more than 99%. One of the nice things about South Point, so we're taping this at the end of April in 2016, and they're finishing up a $600,000 April Showers promotion. Well, it turns out that the end of the month is coming and people haven't picked up their money, and so they're like going to be $50,000 short of giving away $600,000. So on the last night of the promotion, they're going to give away the extra $50,000. And most casinos don't have that feature. They talk about we're going to give away up to, and if there's breakage, well, the casino keeps it. One of the nice things about the South Point is they give it away. And they let me teach classes there, which I kind of like. And so it's sporting to the players. At the Palms, they regularly have drawings Friday and Saturday nights. They don't have a lot of double point days, but they have regular PFP, play for prices, which are usually gift cards or free play or cash, and they're almost the same as double points. If you consider a gift card to Albertsons Markets the same as cash. And they have those Monday through Friday, and you keep your points in addition to that. Occasionally, they'll have a double point day and on the same time as you have this PFP, so that's like triple points. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of different games. They have weekly contests. Winners get real cash prizes, not major prizes, but real. And you get to practice these games before you actually go out into the casino. If you have a gold membership, you actually get corrections on many of the games. This is the only commercial place where you can get corrections on Quick Quads, for example. Quick Quads is, for my money, the most fun video poker game to play given for a given pay schedule. If I have a similar pay schedules for Quick Quads and non-Quick Quads, I'm going to play Quick Quads. Actually, I said pay schedule. What I mean is the return on the game. If the best I can get is a 97% on Quick Quads, obviously I'm not going to play. But if the two games are really close to the same, within a tenth of a percent, I will prefer to play Quick Quads because it's just so much more fun. Well, we want to thank you. We have to work out another name to call him because we're supposed to call him Dildo this month. This time, but somehow we forgot. Didn't
I think I talked too much.
Ha. A talking deal. No. Okay. So, Richard, how can people get our shows?
Well, first of all, we welcome people's questions. Please send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, or you can send them to at facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can sign up to get the show automatically every week through iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube, or at my site, richardmunchkin.com. And to find an archive of all of the old episodes, you can find that at bobdancer.com.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Small Cap.
No problem.
Hit lots of raw flushes, everybody. Good day.